morning, everybody. Hope everybody can hear me all right. What we're going to do to get started today, as Peter mentioned, is we're going to do sort of an overview of ASP.NET MVC, a little background on it, a little talk about the MVC design pattern, and then we're going to jump into Visual Studio and fire up an MVC-based solution in order to see how the framework actually works and begin to get a feel for where pieces are put together in the framework. So we have a little bit of PowerPoint in the beginning, and then we're going to jump into a little bit of Visual Studio so we can see some code. So as Peter mentioned, a little bit about myself just briefly so you can understand sort of where I'm coming from. I've been developing software for about very nearly the last 20 years in all of the different languages that you see up there. So I have a background in C++, moved on to Delphi. I've done a lot of Lisp work and then in the Microsoft space in VB, VB.NET, and C#. As Peter also mentioned, I'm a co-founder of the New York City Alt.NET user group, which can be found at that URL there. For those of you that are somewhat familiar with Alt.NET, or for those of you that aren't, Alt.NET is a group of very loosely structured software developers, typically in the Microsoft space, that are interested in exploring alternative ways to compose solutions, typically using Microsoft technologies. I am a contributor to various different open source software projects. I have a blog. Obviously, you can reach me via email, so if there are questions after this, I do take questions via email a lot. And obviously, you can follow me on Twitter, too, if you're interested. I am a Microsoft MVP in the solution architecture space, and that's just a little bit about me, where I'm coming from. So we're going to start today with a little bit of a show of hands. So by a show of hands, let's get started with who in the room considers themselves a .NET developer? Okay, good. So keep the hands up, keep the hands up. So of those hands that are raised, how many of you have built a ASP.NET Web Forms application before? Okay, didn't see too many hands go down, that's good. How many people have heard of MVC, right? Okay, that's a good thing. Probably not here if you didn't. How many people have actually tried to play around with the MVC framework at all? Created a new solution even for, you know, pleasure or for business? Okay, good. Now, how many people who are left have actually tried to produce an MVC application for production consumption? Anybody used it in a production environment? Okay, still some. That's good, but not many. All right, good. So, okay, that was interesting. Slides are moving on their own. All right, so where we're going next is what is MVC? So we're going to do a little background on MVC as a pattern. So MVC stands for Model View Controller, and it is a software engineering architectural pattern. And the notion here is that we want to isolate business logic from the input and presentation layer in our application that will facilitate things like the independent development, testing, and maintenance of the visualization and presentation logic separate from the business logic and input logic. MVC is actually a very old pattern. So MVC was originally conceived in the context of Smalltalk way back in 1979 at Xerox's Palo Alto Research Center, where the Smalltalk language was being worked on. We owe a tremendous amount of debt to Smalltalk. We owe unit testing Smalltalk in the form of the original SUnit framework that eventually begat JUnit and NUnit and all the unit testing frameworks that we know. Most of the object-oriented concepts we take for granted in modern OO languages today have their roots in Smalltalk, and MVC is really no different in that regard. So let's talk about the different parts. So the M in MVC is for the model, of course. And this really is the data, right? So we think of the model as the data that the application is operating on. The view, its job is to really take that model, that data, and render it into a user interface implementation so that users can interact with it. And one of the important things to pay attention to here is that in the MVC pattern, multiple views can exist for a single model for different purposes. So what we're going to be looking at is we're going to be looking today at views that are rendered for the purposes of human visualization, for people to look at the data. But it's perfectly legitimate within this pattern to do things like create views for consumption by other pieces of software, right? So just because we want to take the model and convert it into a view that a person can read in the context of ASP.NET MVC doesn't mean that that's the only kind of view. It's also worth understanding that when we talk about rendering views even for human consumption for user interface purposes, those can be different views for different devices, for example. So we can have views for your browser, we can have views for your mobile device, we can have views for all kinds of other things too. And then the controller, of course, the controller is, its job is to receive that input and then basically make calls on the model and update the view. So the controller we can think of as arbitrating between the model and the view in order to take the model, do something to it, and produce the view that ultimately gets visualized. Let's talk for a second about the three legs of the MVC triangle. So this this diagram here shows a controller, a model, and a view. And so basically, we have the controller. Its job is to choreograph that communication between the model and the view. We have the view, which we think of as a view model or a presentation object, various different classes. I'm sorry, the model, rather, which we think of as a view model or presentation object. And then we have the view off on the left-hand side where there's no real business logic or data access in the view. Okay, so the view is really just about presentation. So the way typically this works in the MVC pattern, not so much necessarily in ASP.NET MVC, but in the MVC pattern in general, we begin by having the view raising some kind of event, right? So somebody does something in the view. Then it's the controller's job to consume that event and update the model, and then it's the model's job to update its display in the view. Okay, this is the canonical MVC pattern for the most part. So what is ASP.NET MVC? So ASP.NET MVC is, of course, Microsoft's implementation of this MVC pattern inside .NET, and more specifically, obviously, for ASP.NET. So it's for web only, right? There is not an implementation of MVC that Microsoft is offering for the desktop at this time, right? So when we talk about ASP.NET MVC, it's important to understand that we're talking specifically about Microsoft's implementation of this design pattern in order to solve web-based design problems. And, of course, it's a Microsoft-provided alternative to web forms for .NET applications, right? So, again, we're only in the web environment when we talk about ASP.NET MVC, certainly. So ASP.NET MVC, who is it actually for, right? So it's for people for whom search engine optimization matters. Okay, so people who build web forms applications and web forms-based websites, and I think most of you had your hands up for that. For people who have built sites with web forms, we know that there are certain things that search engines optimize for in terms of getting you good search rankings, and those things can be, you know, somewhat impeded in the traditional web forms site implementation. There are certainly all kinds of things you can do to your ASP.NET web forms site in order to improve search engine optimization, but several things that you want to do are somewhat challenging in the web forms model. So people for whom clean HTML matters, right? So if you care what the markup looks like that goes down to the browser, then ASP.NET MVC is better suited for you probably. People who prefer convention over configuration. So in the web forms model, what you end up doing, of course, is spending an awful lot of time with configuration. I'm sure all of us have seen the 400-line long web config files that we have to maintain and so on, right? That's all because web forms is a model that is heavy on configuration, not too strong on conventions. So by convention, we just mean do things a certain way, and certain things will happen inside the framework. Follow the conventions, and certain things will sort of just work, okay? So if you prefer designing in that and developing in that kind of model, then probably MVC is going to suit you fairly well. People for whom unit testing matters. So anyone who's ever tried to unit test a web forms environment understands the challenges of not even really being able to spin up a web form for testing. When you've got code and the code behind that needs testing and so on, because you need that whole ASP.NET runtime in order to even instantiate the page class, right? So we'll see as we look at this later on today how MVC makes unit testing matter. So for people that are interested in whether it's TDD or test after or any of those kinds of things, really any automated testing other than UI automation testing, MVC is probably a fairly good suit for that. So people who embrace the native building blocks of the web, HTML, JavaScript, CSS. So web forms as a solution was maybe not primarily, but certainly fairly strongly targeted towards enabling people who weren't familiar with things like HTML and JavaScript and CSS to produce fairly capable, competent websites without having to necessarily dig into the learning of JavaScript and CSS thing. So MVC is going to require you to spend time doing those things, okay? So if you are somebody who wants to look at these things, and in the end, right, all this stuff coming down to your browser really is just HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. Doesn't matter whether you built it out of web forms, you built it out of MVC, or you built it out of PHP, or any of that, because these are the only things the browser understands. So in the end, this is all that's coming down to the browser, no matter what your back-end technology is you're building your website on. So if you want to build in those native components, you want to write HTML, you want to do JavaScript, you want to control the CSS, then MVC makes that kind of thing possible. And this last one, preferring composing abstractions versus your code only goes here. As we'll see when we talk about some of the differences later on, we look at some of the code, we'll see that the way we build ASP.NET MVC applications is by composing abstractions, whether they're interfaces that we'll implement or they're base classes with methods we'll override and so on and so forth. That's really the style of how we build MVC apps. Whereas what I'm calling the sort of your code goes only here kind of model, which is kind of the double-click the control on the web form and you get an event handler, and that's where your code goes. There are certain places within the web forms model where it's okay for you to add code, and there are certain places in the web forms model where it's not, right? We've all seen the region tag that gets collapsed. It says, "Don't dare touch this or your app will never work again," right? That's an example of where you're not supposed to put the code, right? Some misconceptions about MVC. First one is that it's for everyone, right? ASP.NET MVC is definitely not for everyone. As we saw on the last slide, if you're somebody who cares strongly about some of those last bullets and certainly some others, then MVC may be for you. At the end of today, one of the things you may come away with is this framework just doesn't suit me. It's not how I think about building things. It's not the kind of stuff I want to do. There's nothing wrong with that. MVC was not supposed to be for everyone. That's because the other misconception is that it's some kind of replacement for web forms, right? ASP.NET Web Forms is not going away. In fact, ASP.NET Web Forms in the upcoming .NET 4.0 is going to contain a number of capabilities that are in fact being borrowed from some of the learning that Microsoft has done in developing the ASP.NET MVC framework in order to make certain things that were previously very challenging in web forms much easier. The canonical example is control IDs, right? So everyone who's ever moved a control around in the web forms page hierarchy knows that those client-side control IDs are being shifted all over the place based on whether you put it in a container or put it in this container or not. So it makes things like hooking JavaScript up to the client-side HTML once it's rendered very, very difficult. In ASP.NET Web Forms, they are actually changing that so that you'll have control over declarative client-side IDs. So things like that are from the experience of Microsoft having learned a lot while doing the MVC framework. The other misconception is the best way to develop a website in .NET, right? There's not a value judgment about MVC is better than web forms or anything like that. They are, in fact, two different solutions to the same problem. I need to build a website, but they challenge, and I want to use .NET for it. But they approach those challenges in very different ways. The other misconception is that you should immediately run home and try to rewrite all your web forms apps in MVC, right? And the reason I say or ever is that there's very little benefit to that. If you cut working code and it's working now, for the reason that web forms is not going away, ASP.NET MVC is not for everyone. If you've got existing web forms apps, by all means consider looking at extending them using things like MVC or look at the next project you do being MVC. But I don't want to suggest that anybody's thinking that we should all run home and immediately rewrite all our software in a brand new framework. So a little bit about the history specifically of ASP.NET MVC. Back in October of 2007, Scott Guthrie went to the Alt.NET conference in Austin, Texas, and did a very early demo of the very rough framework. This was pre-beta. It worked, and it was really a demonstration of some concepts. It was not entirely what you're going to see today, certainly. By 2007, they had the first CTP, that's Community Technology Preview, which I think is Microsoft code for an alpha.
Pretty much.
Also in 2007, and this is kind of important to understand, is that an open source project called MVC Contrib, short for contributions, was started as well. In order to take a look at the framework and say, it's great that Microsoft is building this, but there are some things that the open source community would probably like to have that Microsoft either isn't immediately or ever going to get around to adding to the framework. So at about the same time the first CTP happened, so too did the first MVC Contrib release. And those have kept pretty much in parallel with each other. So as releases of MVC have come out, the MVC Contrib project has sort of kept pace with that with fairly good regularity. Throughout 2008, there were four additional community technology previews. This is important to understand because this was something that it's possible Microsoft had done slightly before in small scale, but this was certainly, to my knowledge, one of the larger projects, or at least higher visibility projects, that Microsoft really said, we're going to release early, we're going to release often, we're going to get community feedback, we're going to incorporate that feedback, and use it to shape the product before it's actually released. So this has been a very open development cycle for MVC as a technology. Then in March of this year, we saw the RTM or RTW released to web, really because you can't go buy a DVD that has the framework on it. So it was really released to web officially in March. As I say, in parallel with that, MVC Contrib was released as well and given a 1.0 stamp. As of now, towards the end of 2009, there are over 6 books you can buy on MVC. There's plenty of web-based information, obviously, that you can get access to. And also now we've already seen, just I believe earlier this week or earlier last week, we saw the preview 2 release of the version 2 of the MVC framework put out. Right? So they are aggressively pursuing additional releases of this product. It's currently under existing development. I don't have a timeline, official or otherwise, for the 2.0 release. So the 1.0 is official. It is baked. It is done. It is officially supported by Microsoft and all the rest of those things that you would expect from a standard Microsoft product. This is important, too. The MVC project itself has been released under the MSPL, or Microsoft Permissive License, which, as I understand it, Peter, is the most permissive license Microsoft actually offers around a product. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's one of our open source licenses that basically lets you take the code and reuse it in your applications and modify it and even redistribute it too, I believe.
Yep. So they're not taking contributions from the community directly, so it's not open source in that sort of sense. But it is open source in the sense that if you want to look at the code, you certainly can. And, in fact, if you were interested in forking it and making the Steve MVC project, I suppose you could do so under that license. So let's talk a little bit about where MVC fits in the overall ASP.NET stack. So all the way down at the bottom, we have the parts we're very familiar with, I'm sure. MVC is built on top of the 3.5.NET framework, so you do need .NET 3.5 in order to run it. And obviously with the 3.5 framework, we get things like the CLR and the base class library and all those pieces that we're used to seeing in the .NET framework. On top of that, there's the ASP.NET runtime, and we're probably familiar with seeing all of these pieces, parts too. These are things like HTTP context and HTTP modules and all the rest of that, right? So these are still here in ASP.NET MVC. And you still get the benefit of things like the ASP.NET authorization authentication stack, the membership provider works, caching works the same way, and so on and so forth, because these are all technologies that are still present in MVC. On top of that, you have ASPX pages that give us things like master pages and themes and skins and the general templating engine that we're used to with ASPX pages. Right, that notion of being able to use the ASPX page as a template that in the end renders a bunch of HTML that ends up down at the browser. That works the same way in MVC. Off here on the left, we have the web form stuff, which is obviously not part of MVC, but what we're seeing here is where this fits in the stack, right? So ASP.NET web forms sits on top of the ASPX pages engine, which in turn sits on top of the ASP.NET runtime, which in turn sits on top of the framework, right? So the things that are really specific to web forms are really things like the server lifecycle, post back, view state, control state, all of those things, right? Previously, before there was another web framework, it used to be fairly common to look at this entire stack and call the whole thing ASP.NET web forms, because ASP.NET and ASP.NET web forms used to be interchangeable when you said them, right? But it's important to understand that this last little bubble here, which is the ASP.NET MVC stuff, sits on top of all the rest of the same stack, right, that the web forms model does as well. And so it's no longer possible and even a good idea to say ASP.NET and really mean web forms, right, because the lower three bubbles here are, in fact, the parts that are really ASP.NET. The upper left stuff is the stuff specific to web forms, and the upper right stuff is the stuff specific to MVC. Okay, so it's important to sort of understand where this fits in the universe. And one of the reasons that ASP.NET MVC was able to be released so quickly, and for that matter, if you go and download the framework is a 1.8 megabyte download. Okay? Why is that? Because it leverages all the rest of the ASP.NET runtime that's already on your machine. Right? There's only 1.8 megabytes worth of binary data after compilation. That's actually different between web forms and MVC, right? Because it shares all of that common infrastructure. So now let's dig just briefly a little bit into each one of those reasons why I might pick MVC. So we talked about SEO matters, and we talk about that in the context really of meaningful URLs, right? So this first URL is a traditional web forms URL, right? So we've got it ending in an ASPX page and probably some kind of parameter that says, show me the thing with ID6. And this is even simplified because in reality what we probably have is another ampersand and we would say, and this special hash equals this ID value that nobody could possibly ever type again, God help them, you know, and all the rest of that, right? So even this is very simplified. But what we can see is that down below we see sort of the MVC equivalent of that, which really just says products, televisions, catalog 6, right? So one of the reasons that SEO and web forms is challenging is that one of the things that most search engines do to help prioritize search results is if the name of the thing on the page, right, that you're searching for also shows up in the URL prominently, right, then that gets a higher ranking. So if I'm searching for the word Steve and Steve appears on the page, that's going to get one ranking. But if Steve shows up in the URL somewhere, I'm going to get a higher ranking. Because most search engines look at that and say, well, if it's in the URL and it's on the page, then it's more likely the page is really about that thing. Right? Now, search engines obviously use much more common much more complex algorithms, but that's just an example of the kind of thing. And the real reason that matters is that in web forms, you don't have a whole lot of control over the URL. Right? The URL is the result of the folder you put the ASPX page in. That's it. Right? So if what I want is I want the name television to appear in my URL, I have to have a folder called televisions in my website. Right? And inside it, it's got to have a catalog item, ASPX, and so on. So there's a tight coupling between the folder structure of your website and the public URL that's displayed to people. In MVC, that coupling is torn apart. The folder structure has nothing to do with the URL. Okay? And that's important because it allows you to compose the URL the way you want to in order to make search engines happy and structure the files in your website what makes sense for managing your site. And, of course, I just mentioned that part. The other one, right, search engines penalize non-static URLs they cannot reproduce, right? So that URL that has the hash for my username as part of the query string and so on and so forth, the search engine will never again find that. It can't traverse to it twice. And worse, you get penalized if different URLs lead to the same content, right? So all of those different URLs with different query string parameters in the web forms engine that lead to the same page, right, but in a slightly different way. You get penalized for that because the search engine thinks you're trying to cheat it. Right? And again, I'm vastly oversimplifying search engine algorithms, but that's the concept. Right? So control over that URL becomes the way in which you can begin to control the behavior of how your search engine or your site appears in search engines. Clean HTML. So anybody who's ever right-clicked on a web forms HTML page and, of course, said view source is obviously familiar with the gigantic encrypted blob at the top called view state and control state and all the rest of that, which is really necessary in most cases to make web forms work, right? That's bigger, right, because a human never sees that. So in a sense, that's something the server needs. It's not something the person cares about. When I'm viewing the website, I don't really want or care about whether that stuff's up there, but it does make my page much bigger when it comes down to me, right, because it's got all that stuff in it. Better support for screen readers, right? So if anybody's ever had some fun trying to use a screen reader with a site that's got all this control state and view state in it, it can be fun. It's not fun because it's actually disappointing, but it can be challenging if you're building a site based on web forms and you have a requirement for, and I'll forget, 805.2 or 508.3 or whatever the number is. I can't remember it right now. But those things about making your website compatible and compliant with handicap accessibility standards, right? It's tough, not impossible, but difficult to do that with web forms because you don't have complete explicit control over the HTML content, right? You can do with MVC. Again, because there's no view state and control state, you do get somewhat better scalability because the payload coming down to the client is much smaller because you're not sending all that overhead. Convention over configuration, I'm going to blow through these pretty quickly. So configuration, as I mentioned, is the settings are explicitly declared, and we've all seen that in web config files. They just go on and on and on and on. Convention, as I mentioned, follow the rules, the conventions of the framework, and things just work. Those conventions can be put it in this folder. Those conventions can be give it a special name. Those conventions can be all kinds of other things, as we'll see as we go through this. We'll see this most obviously in the name of controller classes. So Peter spoke earlier about the different parts and so on, and we saw in the diagram this whole controller thing. In the MVC framework, there is a convention that classes that are controllers in the framework have to end with the word controller. So I can call it the Steve controller, the home controller, the lookup product controller. I can call it all those things, but there's a convention that it has to end with the word controller. Okay? Names for folders and views, as we'll see when we start looking at the framework, there are conventions for the names of things and where they end up. Some of these conventions can be overridden and others cannot. So, for example, there's no way in the MVC framework for me to have a controller that ends in other than controller. So when the framework's looking for a class to handle a request and create a controller to do that, as we'll see in a minute, it has to end in the word controller. It expects that. In fact, if you change that, the application stops working. Right? That's a convention you cannot violate. Other than these conventions can, in fact, be overridden in various different ways in the framework. Unit testing matters, so abstractions for common ASP.NET infrastructure. So There's an assembly called system.web.abstractions that deploys with MVC, which provides common interface level abstractions for most of the ASP.NET infrastructure that you're familiar with. Things like HTTP context, HTTP request, and so on and so forth are all given interfaces which you can then override with different implementations at test time. So things like HTTP context are given interfaces. We can also instantiate a controller without any context at all. So this line won't make much sense until we look at some MVC code in a moment, but what we're seeing here is this is the line of code that is necessary to create a new instance of my controller. That's it, just new, right? I'm newing up an instance of an object. I don't need to first make sure that the web forms engine is spooled up. I don't need to make sure IIS is running. I don't need to make sure any of that stuff, right? So I can test the behavior of my controller because my controller is just a class in complete isolation from the rest of the framework. Okay. Embrace the web, so deterministic HTML IDs. We've all seen something that looks like this and tried to put JavaScript attached to it, God help you. As I mentioned, this is being addressed in WebForms 4.0, but anybody who's actually done this and then accidentally dragged the control into a different container hierarchy and discovered that all the IDs changed has probably dealt with this problem. JavaScript is a first-class citizen, so when WebForms was created, I don't think it's actually fair to say that one of its intentions was that you would never have to deal with JavaScript, but it's certainly the case that the WebForms engine is somewhat unfriendly in many ways to JavaScript. Part of its result is that you can build a website with fairly decent client-side interaction without having to learn JavaScript. The reason you don't have to learn JavaScript is because those server controls are actually spitting out JavaScript and HTML and all the things you would write yourself, but the server control is doing it when it's actually rendering that. So when the MVC framework was created, it was created with the idea that it would be friendly to JavaScript from the get-go, and that there are all kinds of extensibility points designed for you to take advantage of that. Built-in support for JSON, JavaScript object notation. So rather than having to serialize things yourself, right, so anybody who's done web forms and tried to return the results of an AJAX call in something other than XML or something other than an HTML snippet, it's probably dealt with trying to serialize things to JavaScript object notation, which, if you're not familiar with it, is a very lightweight way to return data from a call, typically an AJAX call, but doesn't need to be, but a very lightweight way to return data from the server, because rather than having it come down as XML, or rather than having it come down with HTML with all kinds of markup in it, it's just the data in a simple object.property state that looks like JavaScript, which is why it's called JavaScript object notation. Built-in support for partial page rendering. This actually also plays into the whole AJAX thing, so we want to change the content of our page without actually forcing a post back, or actually, you know, having the whole page go up to the server, whole new page come down. So built-in support for that in MVC as well. So composing abstractions, we talked about this. The WebForms model is about putting your code in the event handler blocks. Instead, what we do at MVC is we use typical OO kind of stuff, where we derive from base classes, we override virtual or abstract methods in the base classes, or we may implement common interfaces. So there's a collection of interfaces that we'll deal with. So this diagram here shows sort of the lifespan of a request as it moves through the MVC framework. We get a request, then we do a little bit of routing. We create a route. From that, we have a route handler. Then we have an HTTP handler. The point of all of this is that each one of these represents an extensibility point. You don't like the way MVC is doing routing, and routing will make more sense when we see how that works, but if you don't like the way it's working, write your own route handler, right? So every point in this framework is pluggable and replaceable if you don't like the behavior of it, right? So now let's bounce out for a second and take MVC for a test drive. We're not back yet. So now, because I'm on live meeting, I'm going to have to do a share my desktop kind of thing. Okay, and Windows 7 has reduced my color scheme. It's going to move your muffin. Okay, so to get started here, what we're going to do is we're going to fire up Visual Studio. And I'm just going to do File New MVC Project. Or I am after I close the solution that was previously loaded. How are we doing on time here?
We are at 9:40.
And how much do I have?
About 35 minutes.
Excellent. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to do File New Project. And I've obviously got Visual Studio 2008. I have .NET 3.5 Service Pack 1. And I've obviously downloaded and installed the ASP.NET MVC framework. Those are sort of the three bits you need. in fairness, this is not a 3 Visual Studio Professional. This works with Visual Studio Express as well. So it's, I think, Visual C Sharp Express or Visual Basic Express, right? Actually works with Visual Web Developer, too. Good point. And that's actually kind of important because all of those things that I just mentioned don't actually require you to buy anything, right? So .NET 3.5 I can download for free from Microsoft. ASP.NET MVC I can download for free from Microsoft. And the Visual Web Developer Express I can get for free from Microsoft as well, right? So from the standpoint of do I have to buy anything in order to get into this, I do. And actually, interestingly enough, you don't even really need Windows because you can actually run the whole thing on Mono now. So conceptually, you could start for nothing. So we're going to say File New. And because I've installed those bits, what I've got here, among other things, is an ASP.NET MVC web application. Right? So we see that right there in our collection here. And I'm going to create this, and we're just going to call it ASP.NET MVC Demo. Okay, so the first thing I get is a little bit different than most other Microsoft File New things in Visual Studio. It's asking me, do I want to create a unit test project to go along with the solution, right? So we mentioned that ASP.NET MVC makes unit testing easier. It also makes it easier to get started by setting things up for you out of the gate with a parallel test project to the actual project that we're going to be building here. It goes on ahead and takes the namespace that I gave it and just appends .test to it, which is probably not a bad default. It also recognizes your installed unit test frameworks. So I've got mine selected for Visual Studio Unit Test, but because I actually also happen to have MB Unit 3, I get that as a choice in the dropdown as well. So if I had two or three other unit testing frameworks installed, whether it's NUnit or XUnit.net and all the rest of those, they will appear here as well. So for the record, the way that works is Microsoft doesn't actually do that. They make an extensibility point available inside this wizard for the authors of those unit test frameworks to build a little thing that fits into this so that when this wizard runs through, it detects that and says, oh, I see you have this unit test framework installed. Let me provide it in the drop-down list. Okay, so it's not Microsoft supporting one or another unit test framework. It's the wizard here for new MVC projects saying, okay, if you put this little piece of file here, then I will detect that this is an available unit test framework and stick it in there, right? So this is an extensibility point just about the wizard inside Visual Studio, right? Acknowledging that people might want to use a different unit test framework. I'm going to say create the unit test project just so we can see what it looks like. And I'm just going to use Visual Studio Test because it's the safest answer in this environment. Okay, so I'm going to unload a Visual Studio add-in so we don't get any weird stuff. So what we've got here, let's take a look at the solution that we get by default out of this. So we've got two projects. The first one is my ASP.NET MVC demo project, and the second one is demo.tests. Let's not worry about the tests for a minute. Let's just take a look at what actually comes out of the box when we get started here. So we see that there are a number of Visual Studio solution folders created. So we've got one called content, which if we expand it, whoops, so I managed to drag that around. So if we expand content, what we'll see is here's a CSS file. So ASP.NET MVC out of the box does come with a CSS style sheet, which obviously you can add more in here or you can change the defaults and so on, but it does come with CSS to get started. If you look in the controllers folder, we have an account controller and a home controller. When we fire up the default application, we'll see what role those play. It's got a models folder, but curiously, the models folder is empty, right? So this is because the MVC framework is fairly opinionated on how they want you to do views and how they want you to do controllers, but they're completely blank about how they want you to do models. And that's not a bad thing, right? Because they're saying, make the model however you seem to need to make the model. This framework, if you do it right, will work with your models, okay? So they're not saying, oh, by the way, here's a giant entity framework project you can get started with. Here's a link to SQL entity data model. Here's a bunch of ADO.NET data sets. Here's some XML. You know, they're not saying any of those things. They're saying, make whatever models you need, right? So, and that's important, again, to get back to that whole idea of ASP.NET MVC is an implementation of the MVC pattern for presentation purposes. Spoke earlier about, in a bigger sense, the MVC pattern isn't necessarily about the view having anything to do with presentation, but this implementation of it is really all about that view being presentation for the sake of rendering HTML to the browser or whatever your other target is. So in terms of models, they're saying put whatever models in there you feel like you need. We get some scripts, so I'm sure probably most people are aware, because it made some big news, that Microsoft is now distributing the jQuery script library with ASP.NET MVC. I believe it will in the future be distributed with, you know, other, probably Visual Studio 2010 or something like that, I imagine, as well. But the point is that I don't have to go somewhere else and download these scripts, right? These just come as part of my installing a brand new, installing the MVC download and then saying file new MVC. We'll also notice that there are various different versions of these, right? So Microsoft has spent some time working with Visual Studio in order to provide IntelliSense support for JavaScript in the editor. And the way that's supported is through a companion file that ends in .vsdoc.js. So, and you can do this yourself, by the way. If you create, you know, if I were to create steve.js, and then I were to create another file called steve.vsdoc.js and put the JavaScript comments in there properly, I would get IntelliSense for my own JavaScript library. Right? And that's got nothing to do with MVC. That has to do with Visual Studio 2008 SP1 and later. Okay? So they've done the same thing, obviously, in the context of jQuery in order to make consuming jQuery inside their own IDE, obviously, better and as a better experience. You also see, of course, the Microsoft Ajax libraries, right? And for all of these, we've got a debug version. We've got the minified jQuery and so on and so forth that we want to use in different contexts. But the point is, I just said file new, I get all this, right? I don't have to then go find jQuery, download it, put it in here, and all the rest of those things. In terms of views, what we'll see is we've got a views folder, and underneath that, if we expand that a little bit, what we can see here, right, is we've got account and a whole bunch of ASPX files, and home and a whole bunch of ASPX files, and so on and so forth. In a minute when we fire up the application, some of that will be clear, and we'll take a look at how that actually works. There is, in the root, a global ASAX file and a web config. And if we crack open the web config for a moment and then unpin the Solution Explorer so we can see what's going on here, what we'll see is this is just a standard web config, right, in terms of its format and content, just like in a standard ASP.NET web forms environment. We've got config sections. We've got compilation and debug, of course, our favorite tag. Again, membership, right? So the default MVC app, as we'll fire it up in a second, actually supports authentication using membership provider and really does a demonstration to show how the ASP.NET authentication membership provider can actually be wired into an MVC application. But the rest of this is all syntax you're already familiar with. Registering things like HTTP handlers, registering things like HTTP modules, this is all standard standard ASP.NET stuff that you're probably already familiar with. So let's fire up the app, but before we do that, we're going to make one change to this that I recommend people do usually. We're going to open up the project, and we're going to go to web, and we're just going to change this to use a specific port. I'm going to pick 1000 because it's easy for me to remember. Otherwise, when we fire up the Cassini built-in web server for Visual Studio, we'll constantly get a randomly picked port. So let's just hit F5, and it says, do you want to enable this for debugging? This is the standard, hey, I've noticed your web config has compilation debug false. Let's set it to OK so we can see what's going on. And here comes my browser. Okay, so this is, and I didn't write any code, right? This is just what I get when I say file new MVC, right? So there actually is code in it, and we'll take a look at that code in just a minute, but the thing to pay attention to is that we're getting sort of a running MVC app out of the box, which is one of the reasons why if you've seen any MVC demos, just like you're going to see in this one, they all look the same. They all have the same blue thing with the three tabs in the upper right-hand corner and so on, because you can just say file new and boom, I got a running demo environment with a bunch of code in it that actually works and I can see how things run. So the first thing we want to pay attention to is let's look at the URL up here, right? And, of course, it ends in localhost colon 1000 because that's the port I'm on. But you notice that it doesn't end in default.aspx, right, because we don't have URLs in MVC that end in files, right? URLs are just logical ways to resolve which controller and which action and which view come back, as we'll see in just a second. So I can click, and let's just mouse over here. So if I mouse over about, what we can see if we look down here, right, in the status bar, is that as I hover over about, what's happening is I've got a URL that reads localhost and then home/about. And again, it doesn't end in something.aspx and so on and so forth. So the way this is working is that URL is going to be interpreted by the framework's routing environment in order to figure out what controller and what action should work together to return which view for me. If we run that, we'll click about, and it takes me to the about page. And we'll see up here, of course, in the URL, that what I've got is I've got /home/about. So let's take a look at how this is actually working inside the framework. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come back here and just hit stop for a second. And let's look at some code. So the first thing we're going to look at is we're going to look at the global ASAX that ships with MVC when you say file new. So there are a couple of things going on in here. If we look at the dropdown, there's an application start method, and there's a method called register routes. So the first thing we'll notice is that the class that is the global ASAX inherits from system.web.http application, right? Just like we're used to seeing in regular ASP.NET web forms. Right, so the base class for global ASAX is exactly the same. Right? So we have access to the exact same things. We have access to the application on start method and application error and application everything else that you have in global ASAX typically. And again, that's because this is built right on top of the exact same stuff, that ASPX runtime and the rest of ASP.NET. So all application start does is call this method register routes, and let's look at how that works. So register routes here is responsible for essentially saying, okay, here's my default route. And what a route is the way that MVC resolves URLs. And what we can see here is that this default route, and there's only one that I get, picks the format controller/action/ID. Okay? So when I navigate to the URL, my website /home/about, right, that first /, that home, is the controller. The next /, that about, is the action, right? And you notice I didn't have another something, right? It's not home/about/3, for example, right? So why doesn't that work? Or why doesn't that cause a problem? Because ID is missing, right? Well, it's not a problem because this next argument here, when we register the route, actually handles providing defaults. So we say, by default, the controller is home. By default, the action is index. And by default, the ID is an empty string, okay? So the reason that matters is that when I come in here and I say, let's go to my site. So if I say localhost/nothing, right, it's taking the default controller, which is home, and the default action, which is index, right, and the default ID, which is nothing, right? So this is therefore the same as me saying /home, same page, right, which in turn is the same thing as me saying /home/index, right? I'm being more explicit about the page I want to go to, right? And if I want to go to about, then what I can do is I can just type in about, right? Notice that the page changes to show me the about page, right? So this is another important aspect of URLs in MVC, which is that URLs are considered to be sort of a first-class citizen as a navigation paradigm, right? So in a web forms app, no one would ever really expect the user to go up to the address bar in their browser and actually type in a different URL in order to get to another part of your site. Right? It would be, yep. Yeah, sure you can if you don't have security on the thing at the end of the route, right? So in a traditional application, right, you're not going to rely on, I mean, hopefully, even in web forms, you're not going to rely on somebody like let's say I log into the administration screen, and I copy and paste that URL to you, and you paste it into your browser and hit go. Hopefully, you don't end up at the administration site, right? So the same thing in the context of MVC, right? So for those that may not have heard that question, by the way, was about, and I guess I should get in the habit of repeating the questions, right? That question was about whether or not someone could circumvent security by just typing in URLs. Right, and the answer is no more or less than you could in web forms, right? Because it's the same idea. It's just that it's unlikely anyone would ever type the web forms URL because most of them are somewhat cryptic and difficult to reproduce. And more importantly, usually don't mean anything to the user, right? So it's like catalog view.aspx?ID=, whatever the heck your catalog ID is, right? Most of us are probably familiar with the idea of trying to, you know, and this is typically referred to as like hackable URLs. And not hackable in a bad way, like break into your site, but hackable in the sense that they mean something to a user looking at the URL, and therefore, if I'm in a website and the URL ends in televisions, and I probably want to now look at MP3 players, it's not a bad guess that I could delete televisions from the URL and replace it with MP3 players, and perhaps, if I'm lucky, end up at the site's part that handles MP3 players. Right? Hackable URLs in the sense that somebody can look at that and go, well, I wonder what happens if I type this in, right? Kind of a thing. And because you have control over the URLs, they can mean something to people, right? So the notion is browser address bar as full first-class navigation citizen in terms of how someone will get around your site, right? So let's now go on ahead and we'll hook up the debugger to this, and let's see what actually happens. So we have controllers, and I mentioned before, right, that the router, the routing engine is responsible for restoring, resolving which one of these controllers we get. So it says by default it's home. So what is that? Well, in the controllers folder, there is a class called home controller. And what we can see here is that home controller derives from controller. So remember that we talked about composing abstractions. So the MVC framework provides us with a base controller class that we can derive our own controllers from. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. There's an iController interface. You can implement iController and then knock yourself out in terms of implementing that interface however you want to. If we take a look at the definition for this, what we'll see is this is the metadata about the controller class that MVC provides. Okay? So we can see that it derives from controller base. It implements all kinds of interfaces like iAction filter, iAuthorization filter, iDisposable, iException filter, iAuthorization, and so on and so forth, right? iResult filter. So if you were to implement your own controller interface, you'd be responsible for implementing all of these methods yourself. By deriving from the base controller that's already provided in the framework, you get default implementations for all of these methods. You can override the ones you want to take control of, but you're not responsible for writing all of them yourself, right? And if we keep stepping through this, we can see that controller base eventually, right, finally derives from Marshall by ref object and implements iController as an interface. And if we take a look at that, then we can see iController is actually a dirt simple interface to implement. It's got one method. Anybody can handle implementing one method on an interface, right? And it doesn't even return anything, right? So it's easy to comply with this method signature. So just worth taking a look at in terms of understanding the hierarchy of components here. So inside our controller, and this is a very simple controller, we've got one public method called index that returns a type called action result. So action result is the return type from a controller method that then tells the framework, I want you to take action on this thing that I'm returning. Okay? So if we look at the way this kind of this thing actually works is we type in /home, we type in /index. The routing engine says, okay, what controller is that? Well, the routing that's defined says the /item is the controller, so that's home. The convention is it must end in controller. So the framework says, somewhere in my solution, there better be a class called home controller. Okay? If not, right? If not, look what we get. We'll come to the site, and let's imagine that I don't have a Steve controller. Right? Resource can't be found. Right? Because the routing engine is going, okay, great, there better be a class called Steve controller that I can instantiate in order to satisfy this part of the route. And there isn't. And so I get this error. The next thing that happens is after this /home, we say /index. So the routing engine says, okay, that needs to be what's called an action method, right? Action methods are called action methods because they return action result, right? So it's perfectly legitimate since home controller is just a .NET class. I can have all kinds of methods in it that are not action methods, right? I can have private methods. I can have other public methods. I can do all kinds of things with this. By default, any public method in your controller is considered an action method. Okay, so think about that. So, and that's, you know, that. So again, this is a convention thing. Okay, there is an attribute that you can place on the method that says, even though this is public, I don't want to expose it as an action. Okay, but do think and understand that by default, any public method in the controller class is considered an action method, which means that I can navigate to it. So if I were to create a method here called format my hard drive, and someone were to navigate to /home/format my hard drive. That's a public method, then hopefully that method doesn't do what its name suggests. But if it did, my hard drive gets formatted, right? And again, hopefully I've configured it so that the ASP.NET user process doesn't have access to format my hard drive. But the point is any public method in here suits that requirement. So in this case, we say /home/controller, and the framework says, okay, great, so I got the home controller class, that part's satisfied. The next part is /index, which means let me go find a public method called index on my controller and fire it off. Okay? So inside the index method, let's look at what's happening. It's really, really dirt simple. What we're getting is there is a dictionary that is provided by the framework called view data. Okay, and we are adding to it. So if we look at the definition for view data, what we'll see is that view data is of type view data dictionary. And if we look at view data dictionary, what we'll see is that it is an iDictionary of string object. Okay, so all we're doing is putting it into a dictionary object that is provided by the framework for us to pass data back and forth. And we're saying, okay, great, the key in this dictionary is going to be called message. And the value is going to be this string, welcome to ASP.NET MVC. Right? And then we're saying return view. Now, this is kind of a wacky format for something because we're not really returning the view here. Right? We're returning the call of the view method. Okay? Because notice this is not just return view, it's return view method result. Right? And if we look at this, what we see is that here's view, and it's got a number of different overrides. Right? But it returns view result. So what we're really doing in that method is when we call return view, we're saying call the view method on the controller class. And again, that's there in that base class, right? So if we go to controller for a moment and just take a look, that's actually where we keep going down here, right? So we're calling this method, okay, which returns a view result. So we get that from the controller. If you implement your own controller, so if we just implement iController, there's no view method. Okay, it's up to you to deal with what you do to return action results, right? That's another one of those reasons why you want to typically take the framework at face value and benefit from most of its capabilities that are built in. But if you don't like what happens when view gets called, then don't use it, right? You can use the base controller class the framework provides it. It makes life simpler for you, but don't if it doesn't. So what we're doing is we're calling the default view method on the base controller class. And what that does, basically, is go hunting in the framework for a view whose name equals the action method. Okay? So that's the default behavior of view. Go find me somewhere in this site, an ASPX page in this scenario, because that's our web form's view engine. Go find me an ASPX page whose name matches the action method I'm calling. So the framework says, okay, you said /home, so that means I need to go to home controller. You said /index, which means I need to find a public method called that on the controller. I need to invoke it, and then you said view, and that means go find the index view and render it. So if we go back to our solution explorer for a moment, underneath views, we will find a little bit of a naming convention here. So by convention, underneath the views folder, we make a folder that matches the controller name, in this case, home. Underneath that, we make a view that equals the action name, in this case, index. Right? So this is index ASPX. So out of the box, MVC, and we'll talk about this later, supports various different view engines. Okay, so the default view engine that ships with MVC is the WebForms view engine, which enables you to produce ASPX pages, wire them into the framework, and have that be the templating engine that returns HTML to the browser. Okay, there are other view engines available, and I think Sarah will touch on those later on this afternoon. But by default, you get the WebForms view engine. And that was done for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's already got excellent support for the tooling, because you got IntelliSense and ASPX and you get all the rest of that kind of stuff. And also because people who are existing web forms developers are probably familiar with looking at ASPX pages, right? So there's a familiarity there. So let's open up the index ASPX and see what's actually in that file. So this is our index ASPX file. One thing you will notice, or maybe won't notice, is that there's no code behind here. Right? There's no index.aspx.cs, right? So we don't have a code behind in MVC. Because it's an ASPX page, you actually can create a code behind file for it if you want to. Strongly discouraged, cannot be said enough. The fact that you can produce a code behind for an ASPX view file in MVC is an artifact of the fact that it's the WebForms view engine using ASPX pages. Okay? In fact, the framework designers, when they built the Visual Studio add-in to produce views, when you right-click and say add new view, as we'll do later, actually had to do some shenanigans in order to prevent the code behind from actually being created. Because by default, Visual Studio wants to create one. When you add an ASPX page, it wants to give you the code behind. Right? We don't want to use the code behind for two reasons. First of all, it encourages you to then go put code there. Why would you have a code behind if you had no code? Right? And we don't like code in our views by default, because if you think about the MVC framework, right, that view is all about just consuming the model and producing the presentation logic to the user. It's not about doing business logic. It's not about calling your database. It's not about doing any of those things that the code behind could potentially allow you to do. The other reason you don't want to do it is that the page request lifecycle that you're familiar with in web forms does not exist in MVC. Okay, you're never going to write a line of code that says if not post back or if post back or any of those things. You're not going to override the page render method. You're not going to override page init. You're not going to do any of those things. But it's possible in a code behind in an ASPX page to write all those methods. They're perfectly legitimate because the framework will support them. None of them will ever be fired. Okay? So you don't want to write it. You don't want to put the code behind there because it will encourage you to write code that will never be hit. Okay? And you'll ask yourself, why not? And it's because nothing in there, none of those events are ever raised, right? So by default, we don't get it in MVC, and we don't want to add it, all right?
We've got a couple of questions hanging in there from the online audience.
Okay.
Going over to the Solution Explorer.
Sure.
And this is kind of a convention versus configuration thing. Can we rename the things that are under the model, view, and controller folder? So say you didn't want to use that structure on the right, what would happen?
So yes, you can to a degree. So controllers, this file, this folder's name means nothing. This could be a folder called Steve. I hate to use my name in the solution everywhere, but it's just what comes to mind. So this could be a folder named Steve. All that matters is that the home controller and account controller, these classes, are somewhere under the solution so that when I compile, they become part of the binary. Okay? If we type something that doesn't exist, like, well, let's do this. Let's take the index ASPX, and let's just temporarily rename it. Like that, all right? And if we come back to our site for a moment, right, notice what happens when I try to load index. It says the view index or its master cannot be found in the following locations were searched, right? Views home index, views home index ASCX, view shared index ASCX, and so on and so forth, okay? These are the default locations that the framework searches for views. It is possible to change these locations, but not recommended. Okay? So we talk about conventions. Some conventions can be violated, some conventions cannot be violated. In the case of renaming the folder that the controllers are in, that convention you can do anything you want to with. Okay? In the case of the name of the controller class, that convention you can't do anything at all with. Right? That must end in controller in order for that whole thing to actually work. So if I were to rename this class just home, for example, it won't work anymore. It won't be found. Okay. In the case of views, this is a convention that I can change, but I probably should think twice about doing so. Okay. So, and in general, when you look at the framework and say to yourself, I have sort of an arbitrary reason for changing the views folder to Steve, just because I don't like the word view and I like to see my name in the solution, probably not a compellingly good reason to go fighting the framework's conventions. Okay. But you may have good reasons for a different structure around controllers, for example. Like maybe you've got groups of controllers that want to be in common solution folders and so on. Okay? So some of these conventions can be sort of overridden. Some of them you're stuck with. Even the ones that can be overridden, think carefully about it before you override it. Because in many cases, there are other parts of the framework that are assuming that convention is true, and you have to go find all those places and change that behavior too, in order to sort of educate the framework. Hey, guess what? There's now this brand new folder called Steve, and sometimes it will have my views. Okay? So,
do we have a question here?
Oh, sorry, yes.
Question is, what's the meaning of the handle error attribute?
Okay.
We're gonna cover that in my session, the third session. But
that's probably a good point, right?
Yeah.
So let's not talk about that just yet.
Yep. Ask me that question later.
Hang on to that. It'll come. All right. So what I'm going to do is we're going to just rename this back to index so that my code works. And then let's take a look at the rest of this view. So the first thing we want to take a look at this view is we want to see what it inherits from, right? So this guy inherits from system.web.mvc.pageview, right? We're used to ASPX pages typically inheriting from system.web.page, right? it's not something you typically change, right? You usually just live with it in web forms because it's not really usually a compelling reason to change it. Sometimes you'll have a common base class that you want to inherit from of your own, but generally speaking, you don't find yourself modifying those. So we have view page rather than just page in web forms. 6 minutes? All right, we're just about done. So what we've got in here is we've got an ASP.NET content tag and another ASP.NET content tag, and that works because since we're in web forms, we still get master pages. So here's the site master that contains all of these different content placeholders and so on, done exactly as you would do in web forms. Right? What's happening in here, though, is a little bit different. This tag right here is responsible for spitting out the message. So HTML.encode, and let's talk about HTML for a minute. So MVC comes with things called HTML helpers. So an HTML helper is essentially a snippet of code in a class whose job it is to spit out HTML. So in this particular case, HTML.encode basically does pretty much what you'd expect. It takes whatever argument is passed to it and does an HTML encode on it in order to make sure that there's only valid HTML characters in there and so on. So people that are familiar with, you know, embedded ampersands and escape this and so on and so forth, HTML encode will do the HTML encoding for that. Then what we've got is we've got view data, and we're saying message is our key. Remember, view data is that dictionary that we're able to pass from the controller down to the view. So how does this message appear inside our index page? Right? Where does welcome to ASP.NET MVC come from? It doesn't appear in the markup, right? But it's the string that has the key message that we set in the controller. And we can change that ourselves by coming over to the home controller, and let's say the ASP.NET MVC Firestarter. And we'll hit build, and then we'll come back here. We'll simply refresh the page, and we see the text change, right? So it's a server-side message, right, coming down. Now, typically in web forms, you do this with, you know, server-side ASP.NET label control and so on and so forth. But in MVC, we do it by setting the value in the controller based on what action we're in, and then sending that value down to the view, which then interprets it. I don't think you can get out there. Men's room, at least, is out and to the right. I'm not sure where the women's room is, which is probably a good thing. Okay, so that takes us through most of what I wanted to cover about how things are structured and where things are. One of the things to pay attention to, though, there are two things to watch out for. Here's the first one. We see in the root of the website there is a default ASPX page, okay? And in fact, interestingly enough, we actually see that there's even a code behind, right? So this default ASPX page, if you crack it open, actually even tells you, hey, don't delete this, right? It's used to ensure that ASP.NET MVC is activated by IIS when the user makes a request that ends in the root, okay? So this is kind of a, we'll call it an artifact of the fact that ASP.NET Web Forms was already created, and then MVC gets built on top of ASP.NET. This was the, sort of the one artifact that they could not solve. So they introduced routing through HTTP modules and all the rest of these things, but because of the way IIS expects an ASP.NET website to behave, they had to leave this file in there as sort of a, hey, stupid, handle this request this way kind of thing. Okay, and that's got to do with the life cycle sequence in which things are resolved when you navigate to the root of a website. Okay, so just like the file says, don't delete it. And similarly, what you'll see in the code behind, right, is that in fact there's actually all kinds of secret stuff going on. Okay, so they wrote their own page load event. Okay? Don't change this. That's the moral of that story. Yes. Oh, excellent. Thank you, sir. And thanks to PhilHack for doing that. Right. Well, hopefully it won't come back to preview 3. That would definitely be a backslide. So the last thing we want to take a look at is we want to note, and this is important to understand, that there's actually a web config inside the views folder. right? We say to ourselves, well, what the heck is that for? So if we crack that open and see what's going on here. So one of the things that a lot of people are not necessarily all that terribly aware of in existing ASP.NET, just ASP.NET, is that it's perfectly legitimate to have more than one web config in your site, right? You can have the one on the root that happens when you say, you know, file new web forms project. But it's perfectly legitimate to put web configs elsewhere in your site, right? What the framework does is it basically does and resolves them and glues them all together in a hierarchical manner, okay? So when I navigate to the views folder and try to get to something, right, I need to make sure that a user can't actually go here, right? So in the scenario where this were web forms, I would be able to say slash views slash home slash index. Okay. And I get resource cannot be found, right? Now that would be how I would do it in web forms, because in web forms, the folder structure of your site is essentially your URL structure, right? So in theory, this should be a perfectly legitimate path for me to type in here. Why doesn't this work, right? Well, the reason it doesn't work is because of the web config that is dropped into the root of the views folder. Okay, its job is essentially to register one handler called block view handler. Very clever, right? And its job is essentially to say, we want to add this handler that basically says for any path under here and any HTTP verb used, we want to return HTTP not found. Okay? If you remove this file, you can actually type in the URL I just put in there and actually load the index ASPX page literally. Yes? Yes, you would.
Could you repeat the question?
So the question is, would I also need a route that would get me there, right? Yes, I would need a route that would get me there. That's absolutely true. But one of the things that we'll see as we move through this is that it's entirely possible, and Peter will talk about this when we talk about his routing presentation, it's entirely possible to do this in a way that you create routes that aren't exactly what you expect, right? And so this web config being here is kind of a fail-safe. If you were to accidentally produce a route that would allow you to type that in, then that's what you'd get, right? Okay, so I've got a note that says my time is up. So our time is up.
Thank you, Steve. So we're going to take a break now for about 15 minutes. So you guys can hang out. We'll pick up at about 10:30 Eastern time for those of you guys on the live meeting.
Live meeting.
We'll go ahead and get started.